So I strongly suspect that we actually should have heard the gospel today as a continuation of last week's gospel, so that we could spend just one Sunday dealing with this, again, this rather vivid suggestion that we are cannibals. And I say again, we are not. And I think what Jesus is saying to his disciples here makes it even clearer than last week. I'm trying to talk to you spiritually about spiritual things and about what it is like to participate in this greater spiritual reality that I am trying to make open to you. But those are mysteries for perhaps another Sunday. I think I dealt with it as well as I could last week, and I'm going to just continue to say this week that our participation in Christ's Spirit is a spiritual participation. And though we symbolize that with the eating of a meal, do I need to say we're not cannibals? So I'll say it again. I actually would like to talk more about two things. One from Ephesians today, and then one from a line in the psalm that I dearly love. And I think they're sort of related. What I'd like to do is help us hear what Paul is talking about in Ephesians as something a little more contemporary than I suspect it sounded at first glance, or at first hearing. What he's talking about is, we contend not with enemies of flesh and blood, but with spiritual powers, principalities and powers of darkness in the heavenly places. And I suspect that that's not a set of images that most of us accept or participate in easily. We don't usually think of the heavens populated with malevolent spiritual beings. So what is Paul talking about? And what I would suggest is, I'll approach it in a couple of ways, but what I'm really suggesting is, when you look at human beings and how deeply unconscious we are most of the time, and it's the line that I would like to put before us, and you'll have heard many of these things I'm saying today, but the line that I would like to put before us as a way of suggesting that unconsciousness is that verse from the great hymn, "Turn Back, O Man," that says, "Earth would be one and all her people wise. Age after age, their tragic empires rise." This is built while they dream, and in their dreaming weep. Would man but wake from out his haunted sleep, earth would be one and all her people wise. So I would like to situate our difficulties really within us. The image that I think is so provocative is our haunted sleep. Would we but wake from out our haunted sleep? And how much of the gospel can be understood as precisely exhortation, invitation, instruction as to how to wake from our haunted sleep, but that we are asleep. And Jesus even goes so far as to say, we who seem to be alive are actually dead. So far are we from really grasping with awareness who we are and where we are. But it's not malevolent spiritual beings that are tormenting us, but rather how we have not yet fully awakened. And that so much of our spiritual journey is, in fact, trying to find out how to open ourselves more deeply to this present reality, and to act more consciously. And that we don't act consciously, I mean, just pause for a moment and ask yourself why it is so hard to do what you choose to do. No, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go on a diet. I'm going to save money. I'm going to do this. And we make those intentions, and then we watch as if we were a helpless spectator in our own lives. As as Paul says, I can't do what I want, and I do the things I don't want. So, at the personal level and at the collective level, it's as if the world often runs with no one really at the wheel, asleep at the wheel. And we know how the world seems often to have a kind of momentum of its own, where things and attitudes... Do you think the people that are so divided around the world, hatred for each other, ethnic groups or religious groups, do you think they all came to those decisions consciously? I'm going to hate those guys. No. It's just enough sleepiness, enough unconsciousness. You're just raised with certain attitudes. They're the air and the atmosphere you breathe and absorb, and they become what you take as normal. And that's what Paul is talking about as principalities and powers in the heavenly places. What we absorb and passively take as normal rather than consciously intend. And I think Jesus would be on the side of conscious intention. And that we cannot always carry out our conscious intentions is one of the great dilemmas of our human experience. That we, as the phrase has often been, we are not really masters in our own home. I want to set the rules, I want to go where I want to go, but often something else is at work in me. And that's kind of my segue to the second part of what I want to talk about. And that phrase, not masters in our own home, is often associated with Sigmund Freud, one of the great pioneers of those early 20th century revolutions that said, well, you think your life is run by what you consciously say you want to do, but actually there are many unconscious forces at work in your being, and they often are much more influential than your rather feeble attempts to consciously direct your own life. But what I want to focus on with Freud, and it has to do with this line in that Psalm 84, one of my favorite psalms, and it's that the line that I love so much is, those who go through the desolate valley will find it a place of springs. And I think the dilemma for so many of us, one of the great human temptations, is not to go through the desolate valley. That the desolate valley comes to us in so many forms. It comes to us as we age, comes to us with illness, it comes to us with relational difficulties, difficulties at work, disappointments in oneself, things that about which we might feel anger or ashamed, and we just don't want to face them. And what Freud said about that was, and this people often smile or laugh at this because it sounds so grim, but there's a real heart of liberation in this. What Freud said was, people come to me and they want me to make them happy, and I can't do that. All I can do is help them replace neurotic suffering with real suffering. And that's why people laugh and they go, great, I'll sign up for that. What is it, $400 an hour? Not a problem. Sign me up. What I can do is help you replace neurotic suffering with real suffering. And of course, what Freud means by that is the neurotic suffering, that involves the desolate valley that we won't go through. That involves us being divided against ourselves and either afraid of some aspect of my heart. I mean, what lurks in my heart? What desires that I don't want, I don't even want to acknowledge they're part of me. Or maybe there are things in my past or things in my present where I don't want to go through it and I'm afraid of it. I don't know if I can even survive the encounter. And so the choice is to live a life, in a sense, as a fugitive from one's life. And we know Well, I don't know how many of you really have lived life as a fugitive. Maybe none of us. But we've seen enough movies about life as fugitive to know that it is an unhappy life. You're always having to watch. You're always at risk. You're running away from something. You're going to be apprehended. You're going to be caught. And of course, the alternative to that is, in a sense, turn yourself in. And the way we turn ourselves in is we go through the desolate valley. And what Freud said and what Jesus said is that it is infinitely the better bargain to live the life you are actually given and to go through whatever it is that you're going through. As we say so profoundly, nothing in all creation can separate us from the love of God. Nothing in all creation can separate us from the love of God. That means illness and shame and anger and fear and whatever might befall one. Nothing can actually rob you of the being that God has entrusted to you. But we doubt that. And we are afraid of that. And so we try to figure out a way to get around the desolate valley or just sit down in the sand and refuse to go on. And Jesus invites us saying, there is nothing that you will discover in living the life you have been given to live. It will not destroy you. It will not destroy you. And so the path that we are invited onto is one of great humility, where we are asked to face the very thing that we are most afraid of, that we are most resistant to. And the example that really is in the Gospels is Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane, where he said, if there is any way possible for me to get around this desolate valley, yes, please. And then he comes back and says, even so, I choose to do this because living my life is so much more blessed than running away, even from, of course I want to run away from this. Of course I want to flee my encounter with hostile religious authorities that are going to kill me. Of course I do. But in doing so, I would run away from my life, and I would run away from all that I know to be true, and I would run away from God. So what would I get from that? Go through the desolate valley, and you will find there the nourishment that can only come by living your actual life. It can only come that way. We renounce that, we run away from that, we lose everything. If we renounce our neurotic suffering, our flight from our own lives, the promise is, and you can only test it out for yourself. Nobody can stand outside you. Yeah, face that. It'll be better for you. Yeah, we all have to do that for ourselves and whatever particular desolate valley that is confronting us at a given time. Head right into it with the promise that there will be that living water to nourish heart and soul.